Dudes. Hell.
It's like I was there.
Oh, man.
This is Petey Page.
I am Mike.
J-Mac.
Brutal Dudes.
Do you guys, are you guys Pearl Jam fans at all?
I love Pearl Jam.
Actually. I respect them. I never got into them. It's not like I'm like, they're not a band where when they come on the radio, I'm like, ugh, Pearl Jam, fuck these guys. But again, it's just never really like tickled my fancy.
I very much dig. I don't like all their stuff. Mm-hmm. They're not an Every Time I Die for me, but I really like a lot of their stuff. Like the first album, which was, what was that called? 10? 10 was a great album. Overall, I mean, just every song on there is like a hit. The second album, I think, doesn't get enough recognition for being as good as this. Versus. Versus was one of the coolest, and it's got one of the coolest covers. I had it on tape and then CD, but it's a fucking sheep stuck in a fence with its like snout through a fence in black and white. I don't know why that's so cool to me, but I was just like, yeah, dude, sheep, sheeple, sheeple, baby.
Yeah, dude, sheep.
Sheep, bro.
Sheeple.
Dude, that angry sheep, dude. That's crazy. But but that whole album is good. There's that's got Glorified G.
Glorified version of a pearly gun. Feel so manly when
it's about Eddie Vedder, baby. And what's the other song that's on there? It's really good. Daughter. Don't call me daughter. I think that's daughter, right? Isn't that one?
Yeah.
Because Vitalogy is the one that had what was on Vitalogy?
No. I'm not that much of a Pearl Jam fan. I was never super into them. I got invited to a Pearl Jam concert as a teenager.
Yeah.
And I figured, even though I'm not a big Pearl Jam guy, like I've always heard they were a good live band, and I appreciate talent, even if I'm not into the music necessarily. Check, I can.
He looks pissed off, does he? He's fucking pissed.
He does.
Pete, look, I'll show you.
I can.
Oh yeah, I can.
Google it. It's fucking angry sheep.
But I can respect like when a band is good live. And when we got there, I got super pumped because what I didn't know was it was a co-headlining tour with Iggy Pop.
Oh wow!
And Mudhoney was the opener.
Oh yeah, Mudhoney.
Yeah, so I was super pumped. I was like, this would be a great show. Mudhoney was great. Iggy Pop was amazing. And then Pearl Jam sucked, which I didn't really mind because I just saw two great performances from bands that I really like. So I was like, I'm good. Yeah. Like, I don't, but they sucked. They were just awful. Really? And the person that I was with, who was the big Pearl Jam fan, was really mad about it.
Really?
Yeah. I had a similar situation the first time I saw Megadeth.
Yeah.
It was like a package tour that Megadeth was on. And I liked every other band on the tour except Megadeth. Wow. Not that I dislike Megadeth. I was just never a Megadeth person. But the person that I came with was only there to see Megadeth on this package tour. Megadeth, at the time, their most recent album was Risk, which is not a beloved album in their catalog, for anybody who doesn't know. And they came out on stage, and one of the bands actually left the tour because of Megadeth, because of issues with them. Then fucking Megadeth comes out on stage, plays the first song off of Risk. So not a great start.
Yeah.
Second song off of Risk. And I was like, oh shit. Like, this is what's happening. So it was like an hour and a half of a lot of the Risk album and then their hits. And it was them, like, I guess because the reception of the album was so poor, they were just like, we'll just beat it into people's heads and force them to like it. So, I mean, they played a lot of that record. So my friend who loved Megadeth was so mad. And not only that, they were just really, they didn't seem into it. There was no energy. There was no, like, they sounded fine as far as the performance goes, but it was just, they just stood there, played one Risk song after another. And they peppered in other songs too, but for the Megadeth fans, I could tell they were super disappointed in the performance. I saw them again later, like years later, and they were great. But
I had a similar experience with Incubus.
Okay.
So I love Incubus. I've seen them a bunch of times. They are great live. But the last time I saw them live, and I'm not down with the whole pretentious, like, I'm not down with the getting a new bass player and just changing your whole scene. I didn't dig that. I liked it when it was very much funk rock, new metal. And now they're like very much like a screening band. But so they were on a tour, and this is how crazy it is. So the opener was Death From Above 1979, which I love them guys.
That's a great band. They're fucking rad.
They're so good. And they were so good live. They're a two piece. You know them?
No.
They're from Canada. They're amazing. They did songs on Letterkenny. But they're so good. And they opened, so they killed it. Then the Deftones came on next, which surprised me because I always feel like the Deftones are more popular than they let off, but they're also like good dudes. So like I would think that they would probably be like, nah, we'll go on first. It's no big deal. They fucking killed it. They were so good that there was fireworks going off when we saw this. This was like in July a couple of years ago. And they played their songs to the tune of the fireworks. So they were like, they realized what the rhythm of the fireworks was and they adjusted the song. I know it sounds weird, but like they would hit the chords right as the fireworks would go off. And I'm like, they got to be doing that on purpose. That's not accidental. And it was just so good, but their vibe was just so good. And then Incubus came on and they did that shitty, the Wolves and all those, and the Company of Wolves or whatever the fucking name of them lame ass songs are. And they went on and it was just stupid. And it was like, we literally walked out halfway through because they didn't play any of their old shit. And then there's a song on the eighth studio album called, I don't remember what it's called, but it sounds like their old stuff. And the song is literally about that they don't want to play their old stuff anymore. That's the theme song, is it? But it's such a good song that it's the best song on the album. And I'm like, somebody should let you guys know that this album is really, and this is going to probably come back to bite me in the ass because I reached out to Brandon Boyd as an artist, like a painting artist, to come on because I thought we might be able to get him more for that than for his music because he's so popular now. So if he ever comes on and listens to any episodes, we're going to be fucked. But I totally, like, that whole album sucked. I bought it. It's just called Number 8. And the only good song is that song about I don't want to play this again or something like that. I forget what it's called, but it's like really good. And I'm like, this is your best song about not wanting to play songs like this, you idiot. Somebody, your manager should be like, listen, guys, I understand that you wanted to dabble in other areas, and that's great. Like, good job. Metallica also did an album with fucking the guy that did Hey Girl, Let's Go on the Wild Side or whatever, Lulu. And nobody knows about that one either. So maybe we should probably do a hit album again to get everybody remembering who you are besides a bunch of long-haired hippies that walk on the beach in sandals.
I was super glad Metallica did Lulu, and I'll tell you why. It's awesome to know that I have a bunch of albums that outsold a Metallica album. I feel like they did it just for me. Just so I could be like...
I'm trying to think of like a concert experience that happened with me where like I went expecting one thing and I got another, and like it didn't happen but it wasn't really a band that I was like super like interested in. I had gone to see, and I was like a teenager, I was like 19 at the time maybe, but my brother bought tickets for Fall Out Boy, and All American Rejects opened for Fall Out Boy.
Oh yeah.
All American Rejects was playing like some of their newer stuff and people were not into it. And I was like, this is the shit I know. This is great. And then like they started playing old shit, which is like, this is a little heavier and faster. And then people started moshing and I'm like, you're moshing to All American Rejects? What the fuck? But like it went hard. And I was like, oh, okay. I can see why y'all were just standing here waiting for them to bust this shit out. Cause this shit fucking rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've definitely seen that before. So there's an 80s band that I guess is having a little bit of a resurgence now because of the Peacemaker show. One of their songs was like really heavily featured in one of the episodes. Like the whole song plays in the episode. A band called Faster Pussycat.
Yeah.
So Pussycat had a couple of like 80s, like hair metal kind of hits. I don't know if you know what Faster Pussycat looks or sounds like after that. They are dramatically different. But going to see them live, which I've done, there's a division in the crowd, a clear visual division as soon as you get there, because they pull a good sized crowd. But when you get there, there's definitely people who remember Faster Pussycat's radio songs and then everybody else.
Yeah.
And you can see them, like you can spot them immediately. The difference between all these goth kids and stuff like that, or like metal, like big tattooed, like metal dudes and goth kids. And then like the 80s, you know, rock people who have like kids now and this is their date night out, who look very confused by the rest of the crowd and are very confused once the music starts.
So it's the same thing was with when I saw towards the end of their career. Oh, I hate saying it like that. Every Time I Die.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end of their run, they were touring with Motionless and White a lot. Motionless and White is not a bad band, but they're by no means as good as Every Time I Die. Every Time I Die is way better.
I have to be honest, I don't know that much of Motionless and White stuff. I know of them because they're popular.
Yeah, they're with Grant.
But yeah, I just don't know a ton of their stuff.
It's not like the greatest thing you've ever heard. They very much remind me of the Murder Dolls.
Okay.
Or like Dope, actually.
Okay.
I get a Dope vibe from them. However, I went and saw Every Time I Die open for them. And Every Time I Die, Pete, you know this because you've seen him. I don't know if you've ever seen Every Time I Die live, Mike, but
no.
I know because I've been at shows with him. They have that energy where you're just like, dude, these guys are so pumped right now. And they bring that energy to the middle opener. And then Motionless and White comes on, and they're very much like a goth performance band too. So they paint their faces and they have like a pumpkin headed guy dancing around, fake stabbing cheerleaders on stage. And to have come off of the Every Time I Die, like very bare bones, like we just have a banner behind us and our instruments, and then play the shit out, like melt faces, like while they're playing. It's fucking, and then you hear the Motionless Way. It's like, I don't think that these guys should be last. The same thing happened with, I want to say it was Beartooth. Beartooth played after Every Time I Die, and Every Time I Die was so good when we saw them, we were all just literally like, fuck Beartooth, dude. Let's get the fuck out of here. And Beartooth is not bad, but like, we were just like, I don't even care about these guys. Every Time I Die killed it. They blew it away. So I can see that. But yeah, I don't know if I've ever actually heard Faster Pussycat, but whenever I hear the name, it reminds me of that Tom Jones song. What's new, Pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
It's good, but it's very much like it's two different bands, and you really have to think of it that way. Yeah. Like it's really two different bands with the same name.
AC/DC is the same thing with Bon Scott, they're a totally different band as opposed to Brian Johnson, because it's just different stuff. Like,
yeah,
Brian Johnson had very weird song ideas, and like Bon Scott was very much like it's like, you know, frat humor.
My favorite band like that though is Ministry.
Yeah,
are you familiar with Ministry?
I know them. I don't actually think I've listened to a lot of them.
They mix like industrial music with thrash metal,
okay,
like very fast speed metal kind of stuff. But there's another band, Ministry. It's the same guy, same singer, but the name Ministry originated with his first band, who were a pop group in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah. Who were on Arista Records, the pop label, and they released like pop songs. They were on the radio and stuff like that. The band broke up, but he loved the band name and wanted to start a metal band, so he kept the name Ministry for his metal band. So it's Ministry. But
do you guys have rejected names for bands that you've had? I have a bunch.
So like bands I've been in?
Bands that you tried to start, you've been in, or like names that you went by that
I just don't remember any of them off the top of my head, but we had a list of names for what became Rust Belt.
Okay.
Like we settled on Rust Belt really quickly. It was like a series of text messages, but Vex came up with a ton of names that were just, most of them were just super offensive and unusable, but they were great. Like they were great. Like I wish we could have named the band after those.
One of ours was Dresden.
Okay.
But that was my friend Bob, because he, you know, Dresden bombings or whatever.
I wasn't really into the politics and stuff at that time. I wanted to call our band Bruce Lee's Babies and have us all dress as different era Bruce Lee's, because I thought that that would be really funny. Like, I would wear a yellow jumpsuit, but not everybody felt the whole gimmicky part of it. But I said, Bruce Lee's Babies is still a good band name for a punk band. And then,
who's the other one? Oh man, I used to play with, like, well, my brother and I, we were in a band for a minute. I can't remember what we used to call ourselves.
Pigeonowski?
No. I really wanted to, like, I mean, we didn't get any gigs or anything like that. We just, like, jammed out in a garage and then, like, played, like, one of our graduation parties. It was fun. But, like, I really wanted our band name to be Hair Down There.
Nice.
But that got a chuckle and then rejected. And I was like, you guys suck.
I hate it when people reject my great ideas. It's like one of the most infuriating things. It's like, dude, you understand how great of an idea this is? And people be like, yeah, it's not that great of an idea. It's like, fuck you, bro. It is a good idea. And I know
our mutual friend, Tony Vieo, the way that he and I became friends really was we got to talking at the grocery store one day and he had mentioned being in a band. And he did not know that I was in a band, and Pagan was about to go on tour right around the time I left at the grocery store. So the timing worked out really well. We were about to go on like a big tour, and we didn't have a bass player. And he mentioned that he was the bass player in his band. And I went to the rest of the band. I was like, I think I found a guy. And they're like, oh, is he good? I was like, I never heard him play anything. I have no idea if he play. But he was in a band called 15 Will Get You 20.
That sounds very much better. Yeah.
And I was just like, he's got to be good. Like, we got, yeah,
he's got to fit right in.
He did come to audition or something like that, but it didn't work out for that. But we just hit it off. And
yeah, he's a good dude. We used to fucking laugh our asses off in old wrestling and horror stuff all the time. But he's very pissed.
We tried at one point, we just couldn't get the timing down to start at like a side band together. And that was going to be called Vagabond Ghoul because he called me Vagabond Mike. Because I was homeless for a little bit while I worked there, because my house burned down. The entire building burned down.
The fucking end of Ghostbusters 1 where they have fucking, there is no Dana, only Zool.
Yeah, burned down. So I was homeless for a couple of days. So I was still going to work though, homeless, and I was going to like parties and stuff like that. So I was buying so. We got invited to like a barbecue or something like the day the thing burned down. And Jen was just like, oh, what should we do? I guess we should just call them and tell them we're not going to go. I was like, why would we not go? I was like, more than ever now, we need that free meal of going to this party. I was like, we are literally homeless people.
Facts.
Yeah. So I was like, all right. She's like, all right, let's run to the mall and we have no clothes. Let's go and get clothes. So she, being like a responsible adult, gets like a couple pairs of jeans, t-shirts, stuff like that. I, Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
Shorts, sandals. So we show up at the party and everybody's like, oh, wow, I thought like your place burned down and stuff. And I was like, yeah, it did. We had to go to the mall and like buy clothes. And like, that's what you got? Like when you have nothing? And I was like, listen, I'm not going to conform to stereotypes about homeless people. Okay. Yeah, right. Like, don't think, you know, homeless people.
Yeah. Right. I am one. Okay.
Yeah. I can say it.
I live this life.
Fuck it.
I never had any place burned down. We moved a lot, but my dad's so Spaniards. My dad had some pretty good ones over the years. One is, Dry Ice. Doesn't say it's basic, but I've always liked it as a name.
I like it. It is good.
His main band that he was in that we still have, I think there's audio footage of. I would love to try, and when we get him on here, I would love to get to play some Rory Canova. His name, the band's name was Rory Canova and the Rock Commandos. I don't know where it came from. When he comes on here, we could probably talk to him about it, but like, I totally think we should get, I want to get like a copy of him singing. So we can put it on here, because I'm like, this is what he was like, you know, in his 20s. And it's great. I saw a picture and it's like this fucking, what's it called? With the, like the, like silver, but it's like glowing silver, like metallic silver suit, like
chrome
bottoms and stuff. And he's playing and I'm
nice.
Like, I'm like, you look like such a nerd. I was like, what, were you a hair band? He's like, no, we were Rock Commandos. And I was like, you don't look like Commandos. You look like gays. Back in using the terminology of the day.
Of the day.
There was that one. When he most recently reformed a band. Well, he was in a band with a bunch of ex-cops and current cops called the Cop Shoe Bops, which I felt like was very clever. That was pretty good. But that was with people he was in a band with when he was a kid. That he's known since like high school. And then he was in One Foot in the Grave, which I actually drew a logo. This was my first time drawing a band logo, and I'm still super proud of it. It looks awesome. We could probably use it for ours because we never ended up using it for One Foot in the Grave. But it's like the Grim Reaper with a fucking scythe guitar.
Nice.
It's rad. Then we did and then he went from there to, I think it was the next name of the band was Fearless Leader. And then now it's Mojo Channel. I think there was another name in between there, but it was a weird name and I don't ever remember what it was because I made fun of him for it. But then I don't remember. I was just like, I don't get it. And he was like, you're never going to get it. I'm like, right, because it's dumb. You want people to understand your band name. Bruce Lee's Babies. That's cool. That's a cool band name.
Super smart.
Yeah, super smart. There's a good band name. Super smart.
We it wasn't a band name, but I was, in retrospect, I'm glad it never came out. But at the time, my friend Tina and I were working on an album called Vaginal Origami.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lots of folds. I like it.
I think we recorded like two songs for it. And our label at that time, which was a much smaller label.
Your label? Was,
yeah.
Your label a Majora, maybe?
Exactly.
It's a vagina joke.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pete is officially back.
It feels good to be back.
Right? They were not on board with it.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah, so they were. They were not loving what they were hearing.
They didn't want your album to basically be called Vaginal Folds.
Yeah, they were not loving it.
You could call it yeast infection.
Could have.
Be very blatant.
Speaking of, oh my God, speaking of that, there was a, oh man. I don't know.
That's a segue.
No. I don't know if my father's ever listened to this, but if he does, God bless you, Dad. But he did have a Hustler magazine that I remember growing up, where they featured some random person with a vagina who could tie the lips together. And I distinctly remember her rolling up a $100 bill and then tying a little like labia bow around a $100 bill. And I was like, that's cool. That's a great talent.
I mean, yeah, but like, where do you whip that out? Like you're like a third birthday party.
Excellent resume fodder.
Hey man, it got her like a cover story in Hustler. Like, good on you. God bless you wherever you are. I don't even remember her name. But God bless you wherever you are. Person who can tie their labia into a knot.
I'd like to believe she's listening to this and is proud.
I hope so.
Does your vag hang low? Does it wobble to and fro? Can you tie it in a knot? Can you tie it in a bow?
Just rocking in her chair and being like, I'm glad I had an effect on someone's life.
And it making this sound.
Glad I touched that boy.
Well, not actually.
She rocks because the flaps are hitting each other on the bottom because they've gotten progressively longer.
Oh, there's surgery for that now. She might have like made her money and got a vagioplasty? Vagioplasty.
Her badge looks like the fucking Cthulhu mouth.
I would assume.
Skin flaps hanging out like tentacles.
I would assume she eventually.
I got in so much trouble once for saying that, and I didn't. Kelly did for me. I was on a podcast. I was a guest on somebody's podcast that I know, and we were watching the movie Showgirls.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a weird history with the movie Showgirls. Yes. For one, it's my wife's favorite movie. And for her 30th birthday, I tracked down and befriended one of the stars of Showgirls.
Nice.
So that I could get her an autographed Showgirls poster. It was like months of work that I put into getting this poster for her.
Worth it.
And so I was invited on this podcast as, I guess, like a de facto expert on Showgirls because I know one of the people in it. So we start talking and the conversation got weird really fast. Because I think that this person, I'm not going to say their name, but I think that they were maybe working through some stuff and decided that this was going to be like their therapy session doing this episode. So I kept trying to bring it back around to the movie. And we got up to, for anybody who hasn't seen Showgirls, there's a famous sex scene in a pool. I don't know if any of you listening to this have had sex in a pool. It's not as much fun as it sounds like. There's no leverage in a pool.
No leverage. Nope.
Yeah. So it doesn't work as well as you think it's going to. But whatever they're doing in this scene doesn't look like human sex in this scene.
Looks like two s'mores
flapping
against each other.
Yeah. So it's Elizabeth Berkley and Kyle MacLachlan, and Kyle MacLachlan is leaning back against the pool with like his arms up. For anybody who hasn't seen, his arms are like on the sides of the pool, and she is supposed to be like straddling him for the sex, but she is more than halfway up to his chest. Her body is like where his nipples are. So hot. We were talking about the mechanics of this and how it would work. And I said it would only work if her vagina was like the xenomorph's mouth from Aliens. I said this. Nothing came of it. I said this on the pod. It was what it was.
Someone came of it.
Some time passes. And we did. Kelly and I used to be on a radio show together. And we did a reunion episode. And we had this other person on the reunion episode. And they brought it up. So we said it again. We recap the story really quickly and the joke. Again, nothing happens because of it. Cut to, this is like a year after I originally made the joke. I was doing a show with Kelly on his channel, and I don't remember how it came up. And I said, well, at least I didn't say xenomorph pussy. And he got fucking so many complaints against the video that his account was like suspended the stuff. So what made it great is he didn't say it, I said it on his account, but it's something I had said twice before on two different channels and nothing happened, nothing at all. But when I said it on Kelly's channel, I guess somebody immediately complained and he got like his account suspended and got a strike against him on YouTube and all this stuff. So yeah. And a bunch of hate from like Elizabeth Berkley hardcore fans, I guess. But it wasn't meant as an insult to her. We were talking about the scene of the movie. I don't know.
Is she crazy now? She's on the new Saved by the Bell, right?
She was on the new Saved by the Bell. She was great in it. I loved that show. This is like totally unironically, that was an excellent show, and I was really upset that it was canceled.
The new one.
The new one, yeah. It was a genuinely funny, really, really good show.
Check it out.
Yeah, that's not like a joke or anything.
I really do like
it. It
better be original.
It is in some ways. Did you ever see Not Another Teen Movie?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Not Another Teen Movie. I don't want to give anything away, but think of Not Another Teen Movie where they're kind of mocking that, but doing it in a really sincere way. Okay. Like playing it really straight. And it's just really good. It's really funny.
Check it. I mean, that Full House spinoff was like 4 seasons or something like
that. Yeah, it's not like that. Like, this is a much better, higher end show. Like Full House, I did enjoy the Full House reboot, but in a look at a train wreck kind of way that I enjoyed it. And I think that's why a lot of people watched it.
Is the Roseanne one still out?
So Roseanne is still on, but it's they rebranded the show, right? The Connors. Yeah, I haven't seen it. Yeah. Yeah, because she's racist, so she had to die.
Yeah.
Racist have to die.
She died a heart attack, I believe, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't watch the show, but the Saved by the Bell show is genuinely really, really. So this isn't giving anything away, but if anybody's on the fence about watching it, the setup of the show is that Zach is the now like governor of California, and from his shady business dealings to become governor, he siphoned money from their education system. So they have to close down public schools in poor areas to make this money back. So he starts busing in kids from public schools in poor areas to rich white schools.
Sounds about right.
That's what the setup of the show is. And it is excellent. It's really, really funny because it turns into like, it's not like a fantasy type show, but it plays off the idea that the kids in the poor areas are in like the real world, and then they go into this like sitcom almost reality of these rich white kids who have no idea about the real world or anything like that because they're so encapsulated in their own lives. It's just really funny. It's really genuinely good show.
Sounds like a Frank Sinatra space album.
But there's no like, it's not like they're not literally going into like a different world or anything. It's just about how sheltered and self-centered the sitcom kids are versus the more real world kids.
Which it sounds like a great concept. Like that's a hilarious concept.
Yeah, it's a good concept. It's played really well. But they do a lot of like not another teen movie style jokes about teen shows and sitcoms and all. And it all lands really well.
Nice.
Stuck the landing like Carrie Strug.
But they do reference Showgirls quite a few times in it, actually. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I thought really funny effect because I like the movie Showgirls.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about Showgirls. With the
movie. Depends on how you watch it.
I wanted to see titties when I first watched
it. You did. Yeah, very much satisfying. If that's all you went in for, that movie delivered.
It's the same with Striptease, because that's the only reason I watched it, to see Demi Moore's tits. I wasn't concerned with the story behind the movie. I've seen enough, you know, I don't perpetuate that stripper myths, you know, like you're using the money to pay for your way through college. Like, no, you're not. You're not. You're not. I don't know any strippers. I didn't go to Chris Rock says it, and I'm going to steal his joke blatantly, but like I've never gone to school with a stripper. That didn't turn into a stripper until after we were done school.
That you know.
So, I'm sorry. I know a couple of girls that I was friends with in high school who became dancers later. None of them were strippers while we were going to college. It's like, oh, I need to pay my college tuition. Let me strip. Like, eh.
That's why I worked the truck stops.
Yeah, I was just a lawn jockey.
Yeah.
I wore tight cutoff denim jeans for old ladies and flex my ass muscles.
I was the only dude lot lizard.
You cornered the market.
Yeah.
It's someone's gotta do it.
I mean, yeah, dude. Ass, gas, or grass.
Nobody rides for free.
Nobody rides for free.
This is the end.